honorable members, gentlemen and ladies. We're 3 minutes behind time. Now, I will hand over to you, DG, to introduce your delegation and to allow the representatives of the water board to introduce themselves. And since we are supposed to have 4 water boards to indicate which water board we are representing. And do we have someone from Treasure? Oh, yes. Yeah. And thereafter, members of Parliament will introduce themselves. Hey, can you take your seat?
From the department, we have the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Ayaya, as well as the Chief Director responsible for institutional oversight, Mr. Silas Mbenzi. Then we have right at the extreme left hand corner is Mr. Fanyana from our regional office in Mpumalanga. They've taken responsibility for the Inkangala Water Board as the department had wound it down by last year. So he will be dealing with the issues with regard to Inkangala. And then we have members of the chairperson sitting in front of the various water boards. I will hand over to them, chairperson, with your permission to introduce themselves and their delegation.
Can you clarify the status of Inkangala? Just repeat that.
Yes, it was disestablished, and it's now the winding down of its affairs is handled by the department. And the other 3 water boards, Makhalis Water, Namakwa Water Board, and Pushback, which are in attendance.
Yeah, because I'm in my office as of yesterday when they were phoning. I don't know who they were phoning. They were indicating their difficulties locating the chairperson of the water board. So I was sitting apprehensively, not knowing whether he's here or she's here or he's not here. So it has been disestablished.
And the term of office of the board was then expired. Yes. So he's no longer the chairperson of the board. That's why you couldn't probably get hold of him.
All right. That's fine. And you said who is now in charge of I'm saying the gentleman who is here now. Okay, all right, okay, thank you. Yeah, the rest of the boards can introduce themselves. Starting with the Pushback Ridge Water Board.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm Richard Ngomane, Deputy Chairperson of Pushback Ridge Water Board. I'm standing in for almost 12 months now for the Chairperson, Ms. Patience Nyakani Maluka, who has unfortunately been involved in a car accident which left him not fit for work for such a long time. Thank you.
Chairperson,
I'm sorry. I need to introduce the team. With me is our.
No, we can introduce them. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I want to see my boy, Ilamash. Did you see?
Solomon Matsebula, Chief Executive of Bush Buffage Water. Good morning.
Why are you not sitting next to your Deputy Chairperson?
Chairperson, I was ordered to sit where I am.
Well, I'm ordering you to sit where you're supposed to be.
Thank you.
I'm Apollo Valenzuelo, CFO of Bush Buffage. What about? Okay, Namakwa.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Frank Van Niefe. I'm also representing our Chair Lady, Ms. Alexandra Beckers, who can't make it here, from Namakwa Water Board.
Why can't she make it?
She unfortunately had picked up some personal issues, problems yesterday afternoon, which meant that she couldn't make it.
I hear you, but you see, you probably should have conferred with me before the start of the meeting so I could have details, because I can't ask you what are those personal issues, and that kind of explanation that is just, that does not say anything, is not satisfactory, because when we have called officials to come here, we expect them to be here, and if they are not here, they should be... there should be a valid explanation.
I hear you, Chair. But that's what I've been informed, that she's got some personal issues that came up yesterday due to some family issues.
No, I hear you. All I'm saying is that should have made the effort to communicate that with me so that I can get it. I can't ask you the details here in public. But at the same time, I do need to be satisfied that it is an excusable excuse for her not to be here. All right.
My name is Marat Meiberg. I am on behalf of the Water Board from the engineering side.
All right. Thank you. Can we have are you also from Namakwa?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
Christian Carson's also from Namakwa Water Board.
Oh, my name is Annemie van Wyk. I'm the admin for now.
Just push it and talk whilst it is red.
It won't send me.
It does. It has. That one.
Oh, no. Okay, my name is Annemien van Wyk. I'm the Administration and Financial Officer of Namakwa Water Board.
Okay, thank you. Mahali.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Miriam Lekhana. I'm the Chairperson of Mahali Water. And my team...
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mangele Sekhovela from Mahali Water.
Thank you very much. My name is Twane Sengfeng from Mahali Water.
Morning, sir. My name is Sintle Fagu from Mahali Water.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Charles Gollop, board member of Mahali Water.
Right, thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Umesh Natha. I'm from the Public Finance Division of National Treasury.
All right. Can we have members introducing themselves?
Henny Becker, member of SCOPA.
George Matigiza, SCOPA. Thank you.
Martin Stevens, member of SCOPA.
Buffy Chile Pule, SCOPA.
Nomvula Sangwana, Scopa.
Pierre John Gerber, Scopa.
Vincent Smith, Scopa.
Gerard Koornhof, member of Scopa.
Thank you very much, Comrade Temba Goti. I chair this committee. Just before we start, may I make the request that please let's keep our cellular phones off, let's switch them off, not even on silent or meeting or vibration. They affect the recording because whatever we're discussing here is recorded. So there is that disturbance. It affects the recording. So please for just this few minutes that will be here, keep them off. Well, DG and the various water boards, we heartily want to welcome you to Parliament and to this session. Just to emphasize that our intention really is to have this information sharing session, so that on those areas that we would want clarity, we would engage you on, so that in doing our work, especially in terms of reporting to Parliament on the report of the Auditor General and not Auditor General, because you are not audited by the Auditor General for some reasons, I don't know why, but on your financials, we should have had clarity from your side in terms of the state of affairs and why certain things are happening or have not happened, and so that we can then submit an informed report to Parliament. So it is nothing more than that. That is what we want to do. And we're happy that indeed the department was able to make it, because, so to speak, you are the mother hen of these boards. If they deliver, it's a pat on your back. If they don't, we look across to you as the ultimate authority. Now, I will hand over to Utatu Madikiza, who will lead us on the issues affecting Inkangala.
Thank you, Chair. As a matter of interest, Mr. Fanyana, since when have you taken over the responsibility of Inkangala Water Board?
I cannot be sure of the exact date, but we've started operating and taking over the responsibilities as from last year and up until now, when we're starting now to wind down.
Thank you. What is the progress with regards to the review that is currently being undertaken together with SALGA and the Department of Local Government to clarify the future role of water boards in relation to municipalities? Are you aware of that process?
Honourable Member, certainly, yes, we are aware. Yeah, I think the review, I think we've just seen the documentation of late, and this process started quite some time back, whereby there were a number of issues that came in, and then we had to undergo a process of looking at the status whereby Rand Water had to come in and intervene into that particular area to assist the water board to be able to carry on with its function. So when this review, I think I have seen the document, we're working on that document, but already some processes were already underway in terms of the region to start taking the activities of that area.
an indication as when it is likely to be completed, the process itself. Where are we now at?
The process currently, I think, it's at a stage whereby it must be finalized and probably sent to Parliament. And thereafter, if Parliament makes that decision, then it will be final.
Thank you. I also understand there is a legal process underway to empower Inkangala Water Board to collect revenue from municipalities. What is the status in this regard?
Well, I'm not aware of that legal process, but what I'm aware of is that currently we have Rand Water operating the schemes on behalf of the municipalities involved.
The audit report makes reference to the director's report, which stated that accrued revenue for 2006-07 amounted to about 89 million, and yet only 1 million was settled. Your comment on that? And what efforts have been made to try and recover this amount, and who are the debtors in that regard?
Yeah, Honourable Member, what actually happened in Kangala since we intervened, the remaining staff that were at the Water Board's office, which are two members, continued to bill the municipalities in the area of Greater Kobestown. And out of that,
but Mr. Fanya, the report we're dealing with is June 2006 to 2007. And unfortunately, you did not help us by saying you can't exactly say when did you come in last year. Because I think what Honorable Mantikiza is talking about, he's talking about this report which probably preceded your coming in. And what he wants to know is that since you took over and found these kind of information, have you been able to analyze it and have a sense of who are the debtors and what is it that has been done in relation to the money outstanding to the board?
Correct. I cannot be sure of the date, but we intervened as from March 2007, and then we continued again now up to this point in time. Now, when we came in, starting looking at the affairs, first of all, we started concentrating to the suppression of the bulk supply system. The follow-up from that, because we were waiting now, the go-ahead after we had the hearings and everything, is now when we started looking at the financial affairs of the board. But what we discovered there was that the actual supply, there was no direct cost involved in the supply of water by the Water Board. So in other words, the department was still responsible directly to supply the water, and the Water Board was just billing and collecting the money. That is what we discovered, first of all. And that particular municipality involved, which are the debtors, at this point in time, those municipalities, we're talking of the Greater Kobestown area, where the water was supplied from the scheme under the Valtevrede through to the border just to of Sikukuna. So those are the debtors, and we are now currently in the process of getting to finalize and round up the audit process and the financial statement of the debt.
So nothing has been done around the debt?
I think at this point in time, in terms of trying to collect the debt, what happened is we were engaging the municipalities, as we have now our monthly meetings with them, technical meetings. And one of the issues in our monthly technical meetings was to look at the debt, because out of this debt, if we can go deeper, there is a bit of a dispute whereby the issue of metering by the municipality to the Greater Kobestown comes
right
into play.
So the long and the short of it is that you are meeting with the municipalities, discussing the debt, there are some figures that they are disputing, and that is what you are trying to sort out.
Well, I think that is where now we will have to start involving the CFO and start now involving also the National Treasury to say, this is how far we have gone, and issues. I think we need to take action on that.
I expect you to be more assertive on this matter, seeing that you have been there actually since 2006, so you have been there for almost 2 years, basically. So it's not as if you have just come into a situation where the matters we're talking about happened completely in your absence. Unless if you say we, it was just the department, but somebody else and not yourself personally. But I see that the DG would want to assist, even though she has been in the department for only 2 months.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Well, I want to not directly assist, but the problem with regards to what is a problem that's general to water boards. And we've been through the CFO meeting National Treasury. I think the CFO can speak more to it, because it will come across the same issue with almost all water boards. So with your permission, Chair, if you would allow us to...
No, let's end it this way, DG. I think what Uba Matihiza wanted was a very direct in relation to Inkangala. There is this debt. What are you doing about it? Now, you either say we're doing nothing about it, or we're sorting it out, and this is how we're sorting it out. Now, in terms of how prevalent the challenge is, we can talk to that later, but in relation to this specific one, Bush Bakrij might have a response of its own in relation to the same problem. What we wanted to check was, what is it that is being done as of now in relation to that specific debt? But I hear Mr. Fanyan, yeah, you are meeting with the municipalities, there are disputes around the billing and all that kind of stuff. Now, let's hope going forward it will be sorted out somehow.
Thank you, Chair. Would it be fair, Mr. Fanyan, to say you have started looking into this issue of the debt, but not earnestly? It's only now that we're going to start earnestly by engaging the other stakeholders like CFO and others. Is it fair to say, to assume that?
Honourable Member, if you can recall that the hearings about the issue of disestablishment were only took place around the month of September last year. Thereafter, documentation was forwarded to the Minister, where then early this year, I think that process was then to say that the region can go ahead starting to wind up the activities there. But all along, we were involved mainly in the operation and maintenance, just suppressing the power supply in the area. Only the beginning of this year that we have started now taking stock as the region to start taking over and the winding down, of which finance is one of the issues that we have started to engage the municipality and taking it forward.
Thank you. I really don't know if you'll be able now to address this, but the audit has also observed that Nkangala Water did not submit a budget and business plan for the 2005-06 financial year, as well as 2006-07 financial years, to the relevant treasury. My question would be now, how does the Water Board operate without these two crucial tools or instruments?
Well, Honourable Member, to my knowledge, the 2005-06 statement should have been submitted because at that point in time, the members were still active, where there were two board members, the chairperson and also there were two board members, if I'm not mistaken, because the third one actually resigned. I don't know whether Silas can be able to ascertain to this one to check, because I'm certain that should have been submitted, the 2005-06. Yes, the 2006-07 might not have been submitted because already the membership time has elapsed.
All right. I think the actual point here is that, yes, there was no business plan for the financial period 2006 to 2010, as required by legislation, but
now that water board has been disestablished and the department has taken over. So maybe that becomes a moot point, really.
Thank you, Chair. I'll step off that. The Water Board has not reported its performance against predetermined objectives as contained in the strategic plan in your annual report. What would we attribute this to? Is it capacity in terms of human resources or is it skills?
Honourable Member, the staff complement of the Water Board, starting from the board members, is only two currently. Before they start, the expiry of the board membership, and the staff members in the office is only two, which are officials sitting in that office.
You know, maybe automatic. Let's do this because here we're talking about a board that no longer exists. From what we're getting here today. And unfortunately, when the auditors came to brief us, they did not indicate that, or at least they didn't have that knowledge. Then maybe we could have had a different perspective altogether. Maybe what might be important, I don't know what questions you had, but it might be to find out from Mr. Fanyan, fine, you're taking over, you're winding down, what is the way forward? And then we could take it up from there in terms of maybe to what extent does the way forward take care and take note of some of the weaknesses that you know had been identified. I don't know if that's fine with you. I would want us to take that route because we're talking about an entity that is no longer there, and there are new processes that are in place.
No, I'm okay with that, because also my feeling is that we're flogging a dead horse here, because they're just winding down. But obviously we need to point out those issues that were of concern so that they don't recur. That is very much in line with what you're suggesting, to say what is the way forward from here on.
All right. Maybe you can talk to the winding down and what happens after winding down.
The process that we've undertaken in terms of winding down, since the Water Board did not have much assets, the regional office, as we have stepped in, number one was to intervene the bulk operations through Rand Water, whereby we are engaged with all the municipalities, including the district, to look at the long-term appointment of Rand Water to be able to assist those four municipalities. You will remember that Rand Water were already involved with the bulk line coming from Cullinan up to the Ekandastria. So in terms of the supply of that area, it also involved a part of Mtsweding through the Nkongwini municipality. So also our Gauteng office is also involved. So currently we are scheduled to have a meeting with the district, where we call it the Western Highveld Technical Committee meeting, where we sit with all four local water service authorities, including the district. And the way forward, we are busy trying to map a service level agreement with all the four water service authority, including the district, whereby the district will take a lead in appointing Rand Water as a bulk service provider for a long term in the Western Highveld.
So that's it. The Western National Technical Committee will finalize the processes of getting Rand Water appointed as the water supplier in the areas that were serviced by Ikangala Water Board.
That's right. The municipalities, including the district, they will be able to finalize appointing Rand Water as a water service provider in those areas that were previously served by Ikangala Water.
Now,
Now, looking back, you know, at the failure of Ikangala to sustain itself, what lessons do you think have been learned, and or why did Ikangala fail to sustain itself? So that those challenges that led to its failure could not befall Renwater, or were not going to have similar challenges experienced by Renwater and creating other challenges in the future in terms of the supply of water to that area.
Honorable Chairperson, I think we've learned quite a number of lessons. The first one being that participation plays a key role in sustaining whatever activity that you want to take place. In this instance, even the appointment of the intervention of Renwater was through the municipalities after the former DG had an urgent meeting in December, I think somewhere the 4th or January the 4th, where there was a crisis in the Western Highveld, a decision which was a political decision by the mayors, including the district, was taken that we need to do something, and that then created the start of the technical committee, which makes decision of what needs to be done at what point in time. So in other words, we've got two structures, which is the political structure, which compromises of the mayors.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I want you to talk more to the experience arising out of the failure of Ikangala. Why did it fail? What were its challenges from? When I talk of lessons learned, I'm looking at that.
Yeah.
Because when you said participation, it's a suitcase word, which might mean a lot.
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, Honorable Chair, will be the issue of having service level agreements, whereby there should have been engagement having service level agreement that will be able to serve both parties, sustain on a particular agreement, the first one. The second one, again, will be the area where we are operating is an area where economically it's not viable, which will then look at issues of very huge subsidies and funding, because the area where we're currently the Ikangala Water Board was supplying was an area without industries. It was almost an area that you can look at 90-95% indigent. Then what should have happened maybe was that the Water Board should have maybe expanded itself quickly to start looking at areas around, because its jurisdiction was going around the areas of Malahleni, Middleburg, Steve Chwete, and around Delmas, whereby you find that it's more urban than rural, and that could have created a cross-subsidization of the Water Board to be able to sustain itself.
Did you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to check if the fact that the Ikangala Water Board did not have legal capacity or power to collect revenue, didn't that also contribute to its downfall in this regard?
I think it had the legal capacity to collect revenue. But you'll understand that at that point in time, there was a two-phase where Dwarf was still operating and the Water Board was dealing with the bank. So Dwarf was more in the reticulation and the distribution networks. So in collecting the revenue, one can go back and look at the capacity, whether did it have enough capacity in making sure that the revenue was collected. If you can go back to the previous financial statement, you will see that there was revenue income, and there was revenue being paid by the municipalities up to a certain point in time where the revenue did not come in.
Why?
Well, that's when the capacity in terms of operation, I think when you are being served with a service, you will be able to be happy to pay for the service that you have received. I think that's where, when there was now a lack in terms of delivery in operation, that's where the problems now started.
All right. I would want that maybe some of just note them so that maybe when we're done, if there are issues that you would want to clarify or cross-cutting issues, then we can come back to them. Because I think that what he's saying does raise a number of
of issues that maybe the department, you know, could appraise us on. But yes, are you okay? Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Matikiz, and thanks very much, Mr. Fanyane. Comrade Langwane, it's you and Pushback Ridge Water Board.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On page 44 of the report, the paragraph of basis for qualification, the annual service level agreement that was signed between yourselves and the municipality, amounted to 12 million. But the actual invoiced amount exceeded that amount considerably. What do you intend doing about this shortfall? And has the concerned municipality going to pay the difference?
Thank you, Chairperson. In relation to these figures, Honourable Member, Bushbuck Ridge Water Board had serious problems in recovering its debt from the Bushbuck Ridge local municipality. It was put across to us as a debt they were not going to honor, and what came out of it is that it was more relational kind of problems than anything else. What we have done since then, we undertook a process, followed the debt recovery process, which got interdicted. But in the process, we brought them across the table and we discussed these issues. They pointed out to us that one of the reasons why they will not be able to service the debt is that they felt that they were being overcharged. They felt that the water board was an island that did not allow anybody to look into. So what we did was to invite the local municipality, form a task team, look into our books, and verify whatever is owed by them to us. And then we agreed, moving from there, because they were only giving us R1 million flat rate, which was not, of course, according to the statement, there's no way that business could carry on in that fashion. So we agreed to move that from R1 million a month to a flat rate of R2 million. And still, it will not meet the budget. But I'm happy to report, Honourable Member, that those relationship problems have been sorted out. Just as we're speaking right now, we agreed with them that they were going to give us a flat rate of R3 million a month, because the cost of producing water to them, without us making any surplus of any kind, is running at R4.5 million. So they are paying R3 million, and the agreement documents are in process. We agreed that we are going to finalize, because this is, there's history to it. The other history is that as they pay short, the debts that they're owing us is spiraling up, and it's actually going to catch up with us.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have heard the response. It's okay, I'll just accept it. The next question that I
are you stepping off that question? Yeah, let me just check a few things. If you can switch your mic off. Now they're paying R1 million per month, and subsequent to this report you negotiated it to R2 million.
It's at R3 million right now, actually.
Now at R3 million, and yet your monthly cost is 4.5, which means you have a shortfall of 1.5.
Yeah, Chairperson, there's an agreement in process. They want to honour that, but they are saying that there is a dispute I think that came up from Inkangala as well. There's a dispute in terms of the amount that we're billing them with what they are actually consuming. They are saying, we're not sure whether we're consuming everything you're billing us for. So we agreed that we are going to install jointly with them new meters. We are going to install meters that they are going to follow, so that once we get a statistic of what they are consuming per month as per the installed meters, we can then go back and pay the debt.
Are they justified to question your billing, your invoices?
They are an authority chairperson. We cannot force them at this stage.
No. My question is, are they justified in questioning your invoices?
I would say partially yes, Chairperson. It's only that the timing of questioning the invoice comes up when a lot of money is owed.
What is the problem with your billing system that is questionable?
From our side, we don't see any problem, but from their side, I mean, they are the client.
No, you're not talking for the municipality, you're talking for the board. So when I say, are they justified in questioning your invoices? If you say yes, you're actually saying you agree with them, there's something wrong with your billing system. If you say no, there's nothing wrong. From our side as a board, we're satisfied that what we're billing them is correct and exact.
Chairperson, I think they are justified.
There's something wrong with your billing.
I will not admit that there's something wrong, but if a client says, I'm not happy, prove it to me, and you can prove it, then at this point, you want to prove it to them how much you're supplying them.
So at this stage, you can't prove?
We can prove with our own meters, which they don't accept.
Can someone help me? Maybe I'm losing it. Steven.
Thank you, Chair. Is there actually a problem with your meters?
There's no problem with our meters, Honourable Member.
So why are you unsure whether the meters are correct in their readings?
It is not us, it is the client that says where your meters are situated, they will not be able to give us the correct reading that we want.
Well, what do you say in answer to that?
Yes, Chairperson. I think they have a point, but not to the extent that we will not pay. If a client says, I'm not happy, we should come forward and prove to the client. At this stage, we cannot unless we put the meters where they want them.
Well, why are the meters where they are? How did it come about that the meters are where they are at the moment?
But historically, we took over a system that had the meters where they were, and there never had been a problem with the positioning of the meters until the debt rose up high. And then the meters were used as a reason.
But surely that's an indication that this is not an honest dispute from their point of view.
So I suspect.
Then there's no reason for you to not to prosecute your claims against them. You don't have to make an unreasonable client happy.
Chairperson, we follow the process to recover the debt, and they get a court interdict.
How can they get an interdict if you're prosecuting them? I don't understand. What was the interdict about?
The process, Chairperson, is that you first inform every structure that you need to inform, follow the whole process, and then you reduce your water quota, and it is at that moment you don't actually engage a legal machinery before you exhaust the process. But as we were putting the process in place, reducing the water supply, they ran to court and interdicted that process. And the argument they have is that we have no right to stop supplying them with water.
Well, that may or may not be true, I don't know, but the fact of the matter is, they owe you money, and why don't you go to the state attorney and let them issue summons?
Well, Chairperson, we thought that the process that is in place we should follow the process until to the end. And if we get interdicted in the process, we don't know which other direction to turn.
But the PFMA says quite clearly that if that you can take action against the state departments or in municipalities or whatever, and you must do it through the state attorney's offices.
I must admit, Honourable Member, that there are two processes in place. The other one is that we can take a hardline stance and do whatever we can to prosecute them and lose the business as well. And the second process is that because there is a softening up of heart on their side, from a million to 3 million rand, we can actually see the light at the end of the tunnel. And we're saying we can mend the relationship, and it's actually documented that once the metering process, which is now in place, we're fitting meters, once the metering process is completed, we can then look back in retrospect, and they will pay the debt. So the board decided, instead of fighting this tooth and nail, when there's a change of heart on the client side, and there's a strong possibility of recovering the debt, we decided we'll go the softer route and not lose the client at all.
But how are you going to recover all the arrears? I mean, it's now amounting to millions. Will they be able to pay that?
Yes, Chair, Honourable Member, we are having meetings with the executive authority, the municipality, and we have agreed in writing that as soon as the metering process is completed, they will pay in retrospect. They have committed to honour the debt.
Do they have the ability to honour it?
I don't know. I think they have that. If they admit to pay, they should have the ability, Honourable Member.
Have you checked?
I haven't checked.
Because you're running up 1.5 million rand shortage on the fees every month at the moment. So as we speak, that debt is getting bigger.
Honourable Member, the process is running at a very, very fast pace right now, and as soon as we complete the process, which is in a month or 2 months time, we should be able to know whether we're able to meet the debt or not, the obligation or not, and it is at that point that we can say, look, we'll go against them at all cost. But for now, we're a bit sensitive. We have a relationship to nature, and we have strong hopes that we will recover their money. We may not recover 100%, but we may be able to recover 80-90% of the debt owed.
Well, that seems to be based more on hope than on fact. But this remetering process, how much is that costing you in capital?
It's costing us, Honourable Member, in the region of half a million rand.
And what guarantees do you have that once you've done that metering process, that the meeting will be accurate on the basis that you've already said that there's actually nothing wrong with your metering process as it stands? It appears to me that the new metering process might be against your interest.
Honourable Member, there are perceptions that are built into the process which we have cleared right now, and the metering process is a joint process. It's not us installing meters. It is our team that comprises of the municipality's engineering team that is fitting the meters. So there should be no dispute after the meters have been fitted.
Are you satisfied that the new meters are being placed in appropriate places? From your point of view, not from the municipality's point of view, so that the amount of water supplied by you will actually be metered correctly, given the places where the meters will now be situated?
We're satisfied, Honourable Member, and I must say that this is also a lesson, because you would not just take it for granted that the client will accept your meter readings. But for now, we're taking every effort to make sure that when we go into the meter readings, the client verifies that and they are happy about it.
All right. On that hopeful note, let's go to the next level. Komrit Langwa.
Thank you very much, Chair. On page 45,
under the emphasis of matter, there's an indication that what was agreed upon by the department and the board was very clear in the sense that the assets on the amount of 20.6 million should have been formally transferred since 1999-2000, which has not been done. Can you please explain why and what has been done now to correct this?
Chairperson, honorable member, there's never been a vacuum on our side. We've been writing letters reminding the department to this effect, and I think the Water Board has done everything humanly possible. I think the department should actually be in a position to pronounce itself in this particular matter.
What you're saying is that the department is the one that we should hold accountable now. You have done your job.
Yes, honorable member.
Yeah, can we talk to that from the department side?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks, honorable member, for that question. The assets were actually transferred to the Water Services Authority, that is to the municipality, and there's a history to that, Chairperson, in the sense that at the time when the agreement in 1999 was made between the department and Bushbuck Rich Water to transfer assets to them, that was before the Municipal Systems Act came into being. And as soon as the Municipal Systems Act came into being in 2000, it required that the assets need to be transferred directly to an institution that is considered to be a water services authority, and in this case is the municipality. And hence, there was a change in focus. In other words, there was a change in focus from transferring directly to the Water Board. Instead, in terms of law and legislation, we are required to transfer directly to the Water Services Authority, and hence that undertaking never actually materialized because the transfer now went directly to the municipality rather than to the Water Board.
But what has been the problem in giving that simple explanation to the board?
No, that was actually done, Chair. It's only that they still maintain that the agreement should have been honored to the letter. They know about it, Chair.
So it's actually a matter of dispute.
Yeah.
Rather than lack of information. Fundis.
Chairperson, we appreciate the explanation now, but of course, if we knew a long time ago that the focus has changed and that the assets were not going to be transferred to us but to the municipality, we would not have had any problem with that. But we appreciate if there's a communication in process directed to us to inform us that the assets have been transferred to the municipality and not to us. We would appreciate to receive that.
Can that communication be sent to them so that that emphasis of matter can be removed from their book? but that should have happened long time ago. Why did it not happen? It's fair that it will happen, but really, did you have to come here to Cape Town for that to happen? No, it's fine. So let that letter be sent. I'll inquire when I go home from the Reverend whether he has received that communication from your office. Comrade Fuge?
No, it's just a follow-up and clarity. If I understood that CEO or what, well, the information was communicated, of which the chief decides no, it has never been. And then can you tell us how your communication was, that a letter, because you still have the copy, and which month was that and when did you write that letter informing them about this issue?
Che, what we're talking about here is the process. As I indicated, in 1999, there was an undertaking from our previous minister that
Let's do this. That part we understand. Now, once the Systems Act came into place, I would imagine that logically a communication should have been sent to the Water Board to say, look, in view of this legislation, the assets will now be transferred to the Water Services Authority, which is the Bushbuck Ridge Municipality in this particular instance. So what Comrade Mfokeng is asking is whether there is evidence of such a communication having been sent on a particular date to the board, informing them of this new legislative position. Yes, Mr. Fanya.
Honorable Chairperson, I cannot recall seeing a letter, but I can recall a meeting that took place in Mpumalanga, where, because the process was started by our department in Limpopo, and then we took over as Mpumalanga. We had to call them in, all those transferring colleagues that were involved in the process, to try and clarify this issue. The transfer agreement was put on table where the Water Board was present, and it was clearly deliberated to say the assets were not transferred to the board, and now they were transferred to the WSA, the Water Service Authority, which also in the agreement, it was forming part of the addendum, that will be part of an addendum of the other assets that are outside the area where the Water Board was operating. That meeting, I can find even the minutes of that meeting, whereby there was transfer officials from head office, ourselves in the region, our colleagues from Limpopo, and the Water Board.
All right. Completely forget.
Yeah, I think to cut the matter short, there is an agreement here that you reach that agreement. That's right. So now we want something to be recorded here. Is that if the understanding agreeable that you are going to pay that 20,000 prospectively from the date plus the interest? Because that was supposed to have been done 8 years ago. So now we agree here that we are going to pay it with interest as it is, because the interest from that time was supposed to go on their side. Thank you.
The 20-something there talks to the value of the assets that were supposed to be. Yeah, because the auditor said now to say what is the value of those assets. I think if that is the case, let it just be formalized, or at least I don't know how, but to be able to get it out of their books as a, I don't know.
I think Chairperson, what is important is that we need to, and this is about Kuli Sovereign and the team. There should be a very good relationship between them. Communication, even if we have to do it in writing, we shouldn't find ourselves in a situation where the other one will say, no, but you didn't. It must be very clear that there's a good relationship. The next question that I wanted to get on to...
Just a minute. Comrade Koronov, you want to follow up on that one?
Okay. I think we take note of the transfer of the assets and the breakdown in communication, which should be corrected. But the root cause of this issue should also be kept in mind, because that was the inadequate monitoring and review to substantiate the balances with the physical assets. That was the basis or the root cause for the emphasis of matter. So if we transfer and we say communication will be corrected, that's fine. But we should not lose sight that we also address the historical root cause that gave cause to this emphasis of matter. So that should also be addressed when we sort out the transfer as well as the communication breakdown.
All right. Thank you, Comrade. Except that the Comrade Gordon, of the assets will no longer be transferred to the Water Board. In terms of the legislation, it has gone to the municipality. So the I think the misunderstanding was the water board was insisting that we're still waiting for our assets of this particular veil, and yet it's supposed to be transferred to the municipality. But I think that root cause would apply to these assets and any other assets that the board owns. So, no, it's fine.
Thank you very much, Chair. The next question is in regards to on paragraph 2 under the emphasis matter, that the forensic investigation for 2004 of that amount, which was irregularly paid, which is 644,000. What I would like to know is, have we done something to recover that amount, and have we got means and ways that this type of thing will not happen again?
Thank you, Honorable Member. This particular case was being pursued by the chairperson, in whose capacity I'm sitting now, and as she was following the process, she got involved in the accident and stuff, and then when I walked into the office, I followed it up and realized that it was like already laying in abeyance. And we brought it up, but our attorneys told us that because there are two cases going on, which involves both the two staff members. The one case is that the one going through the CCMA with one of them, Maluleke Nodinkuna. And the advice was that since that process is going ahead, let's wait for the outcome of the CMA, which was given the date. 3 weeks ago, I was in attendance of that, and we kept following up because we were promised by the commissioner that we'll get feedback within 14 working days. We understand that there has been an award already, but not yet formally communicated because it's not been signed. So as far as that is concerned, chairperson, the first phase has been covered because we can now move to the second phase, where we take litigation against the two members. We'll have cleared the labor relations problem, and now we'll be concentrating on the criminal procedure. I have already contacted the officers that were handling the case in Polokwane. They gave me the assurance that they are going back into it, because already we'll have closed the labor relations case on it.
The issue of on the other matters, the right of policy, what has been done on the written of policy formulation? In fact, we can take the three of them to follow the treasury regulations. The next one would be the non-existence of internal audit unit, and also the inefficiency on internal control over the safekeeping of files.
Chairperson, the three relate to one another. I'll just talk to all three of them. Starting off with the internal audit unit, we have since appointed an internal auditor, and that office is now intact. As far as the safekeeping of documents is concerned, it's been addressed. I'm saying they are interrelated because if we had an internal auditor, she would have quickly picked that up. But since we appointed an internal auditor, her first job was to look into the safekeeping of the assets, particularly the documents and the personnel files and stuff. We have put that in place.
How many staff? What is your staff complement?
251 to be exact, Jefferson.
So we're talking about 251 files that were a challenge to keep.
Chairperson, the nature of the infrastructure that we used to operate from as well poses challenges. We never had a solid office where you would have your safe, your everything kept in place.
Has that changed?
It has changed, Chairperson.
Okay. Yes, Comrade Samuel.
Just on the budget issue, there is an indication that in 2005 and 2006 there was 83.18% of underspending, and in 2006 and 2007 it's 72.04% underspending.
Yes, Chairperson, the budgets were drawn up on the basis of the income, as we invoiced the municipality, of course, based on the disputed figures. That's where the budgets were drawn from. But the problem is that when you don't receive that money, there's no way you can spend what you don't have. So, as we received the 1 million here and there, that's what we needed to cut our cloth to size. So the underspending, Chairperson, can be explained by the fact that if we had spent according to the budget, we would have incurred serious debts. So what it means is that we sacrificed, even the area of maintenance must have been sacrificed to a very large degree, just for us to be able to continue with the million rand we're receiving.
Chair, the next question is on page 53, regarding fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I can understand that the board is indicating that this was unavoidable, but what is critical is that does it mean that it is the last time we have this type of challenge?
Honourable Member, given the negotiations and the change of heart by our client, I can put my head on the block and say that this should be the last time, because the fruitless expenditure as well also occurred because of the financial, of the cash flow constraints that we had. You would have to get an overdraft to pay salaries, and that incurs interest. You would not be able to send your returns to the receipt of revenue if you don't have the cash in the bank. But for now, with the changes that we're talking about, this should not recur, Honourable Member.
Definitely saying it won't happen again.
It won't.
Thank you very much. Chair, on page 57, on the forensic audit results, the forensic investigation into the finances of the Water Board for 2004 has revealed that amounts totaling to 644,651 was irregularly paid, and the amount is not included in the financial statement.
Which page are you in, Congress?
57.
57, yeah. Oh, I
last paragraph,
oh,
forensic,
okay. All right.
Audit.
Okay.
Can you explain that?
Chairperson, that must have been a very serious omission, because it's risk-related. I cannot even pronounce myself.
Let us say it is. It is a serious omission. And you would imagine that when your report comes out, you go through it to check if indeed everything is in order, so that if there are mistakes of this nature, you mustn't come and discover them in Cape Town, but you must have found them yourself, and before we even raised them, indicated that there is this kind of kind of a mistake.
I agree, Chairperson.
I think the last...
But is it... Comrade, let me check. This amount we're talking about, is it the same amount around which the CCMA case and that we spoke about just now? Oh, okay. All right. No, fine.
The last question that I have, Chair, on page 61, regarding salaries. Leave gratuities of for two employees were not accounted for in the prior year on the financial statement. The issue relating to the payment of these leave gratuities was not resolved, and the outcome was unclear. And during the current financial period, the details relating to the payment of the leave gratuities came to light. As a result thereof, comparative figures had not been restated. Are there any policies that we've put in place, or implementation of those policies, is there to ensure that when you talk about leave, people are going to do it in a legal manner?
Yes, Chairperson, this also was an eye-opener. The amount you're talking about here in lieu of leave also refers to the resigned staff officials, those that we're talking about in terms of the litigation. That involves them. And yes, it was later discovered that they had not taken leave when they resigned. So this cost came up. And we have a system in place, Chairperson, that cross-checks now the leave that is due to staff members, so that there is no shortfall.
Thank you, Jefferson.
So, I see that there are three of you, including the CFO, but your auditor reports that has not been one of your most stable positions. And your previous CEO actually left before the audit could be completed. That is, it's not, I don't know what the circumstances were, but did not have the ability to wait. I don't want to say differently, because I don't know what you had done to him that would make him run away in the middle of an audit. And then you have another one here. Is it going to stay?
Jefferson, that's a big challenge. We are a small water boat that has limitations in terms of packages. So what we do is we go out there, we get the best and we put them in the limelight, and government departments come and fish from our ponds. So we have a serious problem as far as keeping, especially the CFOs, is concerned.
We are not sure whether the gentleman at the back is going to be around for
a while. I'll ask him to give us the assurance right now, Jefferson.
No, we don't need that. I was merely raising it to say it is important to. Yes, Comrade Lamont.
I'm sorry, Che. There's a last one that I not because I hate you. on page 39. There's a concern that has been raised that the board's credit control system is not effective because Bushbuck Ridge Local Municipality has not made significant payments for water services invoices issued to them during the year. As a result, the board had to provide for doubtful debts of 24 million. It's on page 39.
Yes, I see that, Honourable Member. Can I just ask the CE to speak to that?
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson. Honourable Member, Thank you, Chairperson, for this question. The issue in question is basically relating to our cash flow challenge, as we indicated earlier. But the $24 million put as a doubtful debt was basically in relation to the new billing points that the municipalities agreed we should be billing from. The assumption is that there might be some losses that could be catered for because of the new billing point. As we do the retrospect calculation, you're bound to have a deficit. So that will come in handy to be a correction factor in looking into the previous invoices that we have issued. Thank you.
Yeah, and I hope going forward it will assist us that whoever chairs your audit committee, not only sign, but we know who it is, and your chief executive. Most of the annual reports that we peruse through always have those minor things, just for purpose of completeness.
Sorry, can we get a clarity?
Yeah.
I understand this assumption of this doubtful debt. Am I quoting you correctly that it's an assumption? You assume that it might be a doubtful debt, or what does that mean?
Chairperson, it is a provision for doubtful debt because they owe us so much money, and once we finalize the metering process and we look in retrospect, we might not be able to recover the whole amount, and we might. So it is an accounting policy thing to provide for the doubtful debts if you're not quite sure you'll get 100% back.
The last one, Chair, is that can I just check whether the board, the functionality of the board, the board's credit control system, is it functioning? Are we going to not be having the same problems in the future?
Yes, Chairperson, it is functioning. The problem was actually not as technical as it appears. It was more relational. That's why we're talking of the change of heart. So we shouldn't have it again.
What is this relational problem that you're having?
It's political relational problem, Chairperson, which is...
It's still a suitcase statement. Can you unpack it? What does that
mean? What I mean, Chairperson, is that if the client tells you we are not going to pay you, and after a round of talks, and they admit to be understanding the position where you're coming from, and they say, because we understand, now we can start negotiating so we can pay you. That's what I call relational.
How does it become political?
Maybe I should withdraw that word, Chairperson.
Yeah, that's better. We do understand that when Buhlabela district was disestablished, if my information is correct, they had debts owing to you. Is that correct?
Correct, Chairperson.
How has that been resolved?
There has been a process which took place in my absence, and the CE has handy information right now. I will just ask him to pronounce himself to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. The date Buhlabela was disestablished, we started hunting down the $26 million that was owed to us for bulk water services. We engaged the then disestablishment committee, which was composed of Ehlanzeni District Municipality and Mopani. The answers we got from them as they were closing down everything lately is that there was money transferred to the local municipality, Bushbuck Ridge, which they had targeted that should close the debt that was owed to the Bushbuck Ridge Water Board. But that was not forthcoming. But as my deputy chairperson indicated, the relationship that was then between us and Bushbuck Ridge was so rife that the municipality wouldn't come to the table to discuss that particular debt. The recent development is that through DPLG, SALGA and SAU, there's a task team and DWARF chairperson. There's a task team that is tasked to look at these particular cases in the country, mainly focusing on our debt with Botswana and the current debt with Bushbuck Ridge, including the service level agreements that are a difficulty to sign with municipalities. I must announce that our first meeting date has been set for the 30th of June this month, where the task team will come down to Bushbuck Ridge to discuss these and a host of range of issues relating to service level agreements. Thank you, Chair.
All right.
Stop operations, which was one of our other clients, and
And the reality is that the water board or the water provision within that area was historically run and operated and provided by for the mines. OCC and the Beers ran the operations. They provided the personnel. They paid the personnel. So we inherited the situation with when the board took over in the 1980s. They inherited the debt of 27 million, which they're still paying off today to the tune of 245,000 rand a year out of running costs. We also had to take up a loan with the Development Bank of South Africa, for which we're paying just on 7,000 rand every 6 months. So the reality is that we are sitting in a community that there's very few people, but we have to run a main water supply of approximately 200 kilometers because people have to get water.
All right. Okay, so that's fine.
In terms of that running of that excessive, very, very long pipeline with very few people, few relative customers, I've got understanding for that. I see your charge is just over 3 rand per kiloliter. What is about the average charges of other water boards in terms of the bulk delivery of water to municipalities?
Our charge will go to 369 per kiloliter, which I think is somewhere. In fact, some people have stated to us our water is expensive, but those are the realities of our situation with the infrastructure that we have to maintain.
Then, with regard to your notes to the financial statements, I notice that your trade debtors is 3.5 million. 3.5 million, and this 3.5 million obviously would have been included in your total sales of 10 million. That reflects a vulnerability of 35% in terms of the total. There is no ways that any organization, whether it's a water board, whether it is a shop, whatever it is, can run trade debtors at longer than 1 month outstanding account. If you've gone on a 1 month type of account, if you had prudent accountancy, if you had somebody with a little bit, and I will say little, of financial background, they would tell you that under no circumstances at any stage could your outstanding debtors be more than 1 million rand at any given point through the year. What are you doing about trade debtors to convert that and not to go into this morass deeper and deeper and deeper all the time?
Honourable Member, the reality is that we have 34 staff members. Of those, 33 of them is technical people working on the waterworks. One of them, the lady behind me, is the only admin staff member. She does all the financials, does the payrolls, does everything. And we only have two major clients, and that is Namakwa Municipality and the Beers, and they pay us on time as far as my, and if they don't pay, then we're in trouble. It's as simple as that.
But obviously, according to these figures, unless something is drastically wrong in your financial statements, I haven't thought about sundry debtors. I'm talking about trade debtors. You only can have, in terms of my way of thinking, basically about two major trade debtors. And they must be responsible for the total amount there. So it is a matter of two people that you've got to check up and stand on them and take them to court if they're not doing their thing. I'm not talking about your sundry debtors. I'm talking about your trade debtors. You've got two. And then they are not paying on time. They are paying, according to this, they're paying you every 3 months. They're about 3 months behind. I don't have to be a wizard to look at that into your financial statements.
As you know, local government accounting systems also, I mean, you got to live with that, the way that they pay you. You invoice them, it goes through the systems. And
I'm sorry, I disagree. If you look at the Public Finance Management Act, and if you look at the Local Government Finance Act, there is a stipulation that if a proper invoice had been submitted, it must be paid within 31 days. And if not, you can start raising interest. That makes it that that institution will have then to respond to say that they have paid interest on outstanding amounts, and that makes it unauthorized expenditure, and they are in very, very deep trouble. I disagree, and I think that we must put this to bed forever and ever, that state departments cannot pay anything that is outstanding after 2 months with a state department. This committee will not tolerate. The Auditor General will not tolerate it, because if I can deviate from this, this is the destruction of small business in this country. It's exactly because state departments, local departments, do not pay in time. And we will not tolerate it. There's not an excuse in the least for this. Not for you, but neither not for you, your debtors here, which would be then the relevant municipalities. And I think that if you can go out, advise them that henceforth you're going to charge interest on outstanding amounts longer than 31 days.
I hear what you're saying, Honourable Member. I must also just note that I'm also a councillor at Namakwa Municipality, which that's just the function. Two of us of the board members comes from Namakwa, two of us comes from the Beers, and the other ones. So yes, we actually, you've got to sit on the both chairs many days, and I understand what you're saying. Those are the realities that we as a water board are faced with to just make ends meet. The reality is that we as a water board, since we've taken over last year in May, have realized that we on a quick down run into disaster, and we're not sure how to stop this.
All right. We'll have you
have raised the aspect of staff. Now, obviously, a contingent of 34 staff members is minuscule in terms of what generally is being perceived. According to a rough estimate that I've had here from your books, is that only four of them are managerial executive level. The remainder are not on managerial level. Yet, in this document of yours, in the executive summary, you say that the most critical issues related in your organization to an extremely dissatisfied labor force. Those are shocking, a very, very hard word. An extremely dissatisfied labor force. How can, in other words, 30 of them who are not on managerial level, how can 30 people be extremely dissatisfied?
Honourable Member, that was the situation that that we inherited. I mean, we can't run away from that. You talk about managerial staff, we don't have any. I mean, the managerial staff that they refer to is artisans. So, fitness and turners, those are the kind of people that is being seen as managerial. We don't have a manager. We only at the managerial level for somebody sitting in the office is only the lady who works in the admin department in the barbie. The rest of the people are stationed in places such as Oakip, it's a major pump station, in places such as Henkries. And yes, the board, when it took over in May, in fact had to deal with a lot of dissatisfaction amongst its workers. And it lot of it was the board, the old board was disestablished, a way it wanted to do certain, cut down a certain expenditure and privileges that the staff enjoyed, and the staff wasn't happy about that. Then a member from DWAF was appointed to deal with some of that stuff. So you can imagine he couldn't answer to a lot of these things because he was waiting for a new board. In the meantime, there's an Article 78 on the go as well, whether to disestablish the Namakwa Water Board as well and take the responsibilities over to Namakwa. That's been ongoing since 2004, and we still haven't had any feedback with regard to that. So in the meantime, workers were being told or got the impression that they were taken over by the municipality. They didn't know where to go. So that you had a lot of dissatisfied and unhappy workers was the case.
Okay. I don't think we can pursue this matter much further. Just to say, this entity is in a mess. There's dramatic things to be done in terms of a turnaround. And I think that it is a good thing that the Department of Water Affairs is present over here. I think that an urgent investigation into this particular aspect must be done to see if it is possible to have a turnaround strategy. The integrity of the pipeline, according to yourself, is at risk, and leaks occurred due to an increased number of pipe bursts along high pressure section. It's totally at risk, your system at this stage. It needs urgent repair or assistance. I think if I can soothe matters at the end by saying that per capita, I believe that you've got probably the longest pipeline, meter by meter, per capita per client that are using that. I'm talking now about the whole of the Namakwa end users from the municipalities as such. And for that, we've got a tremendous sympathy. But I think that this should be taken into consideration by the department, and that the department should look at this particular matter, because out there, obviously, the people on the ground need water. We cannot let the people starve of thirst or whatever it would be, but something urgent must be done. And again, in closure, my absolute dissatisfaction that the person responsible is not here and to have faced a little bit of her own music. Thank you.
All right. I have three comrades who want to talk. I hope we'll close it on that note of the longest pipe. But comrade Vincent, comrade Pierre, then comrade Koranov.
No, sir, I agree with Honorable Becker that we should close it there and understand that there's no way that this water board is going to win this fight. So I really think it's unfair for us to fight with them. But I think the people that we need to talk to is the department. 2006, he knew that there was this problem. Or 2004, I'm not sure what date you gave us. But I'm saying it's clear that, one, the water board is superfluous in its current form. It can't be a water board serving 45 or 50 members, or even 500 members for that sake. The major customers are either closing down or planning to close down, and the department takes 3 years to take a decision. So I think what we would need, Chair, is for the department to indicate to us what is the holdup, and when do you intend resolving this problem. I don't think we should be calling the board back even next year. What we should be doing is calling the department and saying, what are you doing to resolve this problem? Because you're not going to win this fight, sir. You're never going to win this fight, ever. I agree with Annie But I think that the department must be accountable for this thing.
Yeah, maybe let's do it this way, comrade. Because from the report of Ikangala, which was disestablished, I think there are issues that must definitely go to the department. So I thought maybe let's finish with Mahalis and then and see what issues can the department clear us on, and then we could take it up from there. But let me check, Comrade Pierre.
Thank you, Chair. I won't be long. I just wanted to find out, you say your two biggest customers are the municipality and the BS. Now, the BS, I would say, is supplying the houses in Plains here and the factory. Now, how many houses are they supplying in Plains here? And what is the amount that they pay every month? Because I've got another follow-up on it.
The accounting office is just between 180 and 200,000 rand per month. It's difficult because Plains is a closed town. They're in the process of opening that because of the mining area. So in terms of their situation, it's not that big a town. I lived there for 9 years. So I would say...
Yes, how many houses are there?
Approximately 500.
All right.
Now this is my point, you see, because the beers might be saying it's not worth their while or they're closing down, but as they're closing down, other people are coming in because it's economies of scale to mine diamonds, and also there are bigger diamonds also being discovered right there where you are now. I know it, you know as well as I do. But the houses and planes here belong to the beers, right? So they are going to, according to my information, to have the people living in the houses give them the option to purchase the house. So you, sitting on the council and your chairperson, plus another council also on this board, you are sitting also on the municipality. Now, they're going to come to you to ask to have that becoming subdivided, individual plots so people can buy. Now, whenever a developer, which in this case will be the beer, come to your municipality, you said, I want to cut up these plots and make houses, or these are already houses on these plots, then there must be at least a capital amount or capital contribution from the developer, which in this case is the BS. So I think when that moment comes, then you should take into consideration the amount of money that you still owe on the pipeline and the amount of money that you need to rebuild the pipeline, which is 30 million for a 27-kilometer section. So maybe you can get a bit of money from that side when it comes to the establishment of the town, which you are in control of because you're on the council. So I think you can maybe, there's an opportunity to get some money. Thanks.
Let's just make a statement here, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I remember what the situation with Glency is, that it's approximately 130 kilometers from Nababi. The line from Nababi to Glency is owned and maintained by De Beers. So that line doesn't even belong to us. The line that's under duress is the main line into the whole Namakwa region for us, which is the 30 kilometers that we need to replace urgently, and the estimates are it's in the vicinity of 80,000. The process that they talk about in Plenty is under 80 million. The process that you talk about in terms of the Clancy privatization and the opening of the town that's undergoing at the moment, and those discussions are being led in terms of whether how much money the municipality is going to get out of the process and whether there's going to be some kind of process on the go. I'm not quite sure, but we'll, it's something to look into.
Yeah, I think it's free advice. You can look into that.
Chairperson, thank you to Mr. van der Heuvel for the answer. I think the questions in future should rather be directed to the department, because if I look at the annual report, your annual report, then I see your operational report is being signed by a chairperson, but he doesn't explain. He's not on the board. Where he comes from. Secondly, if you look at your establishment, your staff establishment per level, then I think directing to the department, if you look at the various levels from level 1 to level 16, to produce the annual report with the levels that the board has at the moment, I think it's an impossible task to do. Further, I see there's no audit committee isn't in place, and no internal auditors. So it's an accident waiting to happen. And I think the department should address these issues very urgently. They heard what is the status. But I look at the annual report and it's not up to standard.
All right, thank you, comrades. I think let's maybe Advocate Stevens, let's go to Mahales and then when we're done we could maybe take up on those issues that we think the department should actually give us guidance on going forward. Advocate Stevens, thank you very much from Namakwa, with the addendum that Honorable Becker has made, that we do not take it well that the chairperson is not here when we had wanted him or her to be here to account for the affairs of the water board. Advocate Stevens?
Thank you, Chair. Mahales Water, I think, is in a better position in that it can't really plead poverty, can it? You service a very, very wide area, as I understand it, from Rustenburg in the west to Cullinan in the east.
Yes, Honourable Member.
I fail to understand, however, if I look at the report by the financial officer on page 77, it seems that your other income, which is made up of a management fee, etc., 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 is almost equal to your gross revenue for the selling of water. It seems a rather strange situation. It lacks focus on what is your core business? Supplying water or supplying management advice, management services?
Honourable Member, the information given there is that the increase is due to the management fee received because we are participating in the Rustenburg Trust as Mahales Water. So the management fee was attributed to that increase, and also on the part of the City of Tshwane. So Tshwane and the Rustenburg Trust.
I understand that, but are you in the business of selling water or use business of doing management services?
Honourable Member, we are in the business of selling bulk water.
If that is your core business, then I think we have a focus problem apparently here, because your management fees are virtually equal to your gross revenue from selling water. And I think you're going to have to concentrate on either the one or the other. You must look at that situation, because there's a duality of focus here that might not bode well for your future operations.
Point taken, Your Honor.
But of course, you're not suggesting that it's legal, isn't it?
No, I'm not suggesting that it's illegal. No, no.
It's not an injunction.
No. There are, however, governance issues that do crop up, and the first is who is the chair of the audit committee?
It's Advocate Galip.
And he is not here.
He is here, right over there.
Ah. Well, perhaps we can hear from him why. Although the audit committee met four times during the year as required by the PFMA, but
they have not played their oversight role, which is really the point of the audit committee. By making regular follow-ups with management to check if issues raised by both internal and external auditors have been implemented. Why this lack of oversight?
Honorable Stevens, who do you want to respond? You said you wanted him to respond. All right. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, through you to the Honourable Member, the Audit Committee did do its oversight role. There's an elaborate process in place to try and make sure that the qualifications and other matter of emphasis of the previous years were addressed. This has been ongoing in the committee. There are, however, also certain governance issues inside the organization which do not always support the audit committee.
I think the first question that arises from that is whether I understand you to now say that the auditor's report to us is wrong. Because they say that you acknowledged that you have not played your oversight role in making regular follow-ups with management.
Mr. Chair, through you to the Honourable Member, that is an incorrect reading of what happened at the Audit Committee. It was taken up with the auditors. It was a point raised at an Audit Committee. We indicated to them what had happened. They were going to change that. It hasn't happened.
Fine, then. What are the problems that you have inside and what are you doing about them that you've referred to?
Mr. Chair, let me just short and sweet is the CFO of Mogalies Water has resigned. We're looking for a new CFO. Let me leave it at that and not go into
Don't leave it at that. Go beyond that. Otherwise, you're withholding information from us. I mean, how do we conclude the matter if we don't have all the information?
All right, Mr. Chair, if you want to go into the matter, there was a report submitted to the board by the audit committee, which ran into four pages of point bullets of things that needed attention. Amongst other things, the audit committee was constantly trying to oversee the removal of qualifications in a subsequent audit. This was just simply not carried out by the financial services, the GM finances, the CFO. Those were the sort of things. There was a lack of basic accountancy. Things that should have been done by the officials were just simply not done. They were stonewalling, amongst other things, the audit committee.
Well, this seems an extremely serious situation. Is that a continuing situation, or is that history?
Mr. Chair, through you, I hope it is history. We haven't appointed a new CFO yet. A lot of the things that weren't done have subsequently been done, the ball has started rolling, we've started making progress, and we hope that the progress will continue and that this is something which is historic.
I only allowed the chairman of Pushback Ridge to talk of hope because he's a pastor, but we need to deal with the factual situation. Otherwise, it's going to be one step forward, two steps back.
Right, Mr. Chair. Let's say the facts are we've taken the first step. The General Manager of Finances, or the CFO, has resigned. The second step is now the appointment of a new General Manager of Finances, CFO. And I trust is very close to hope.
that we will get a suitably qualified person, that the process will be done correctly. I must, as a board member, say that I believe in the process, and therefore I can only say that the fact is we're looking for that person. What we get, eventually, we're still dealing with people, we're still dealing with human beings, and in that state we say we hope that our best endeavors to appoint the best person will give us the results. I cannot guarantee them.
All right.
But the systems and the processes are in place to get this person. Mr. Chair, we must also realize that we had a change of CEO in the past year. We had an acting CEO for a long period, with a new CEO in position who is also a financially qualified and astute person. These things are also being attended to. These are facts. This is not a hope.
All right.
So everything is indicative that based on the fact that we are making progress.
All right. Okay. Chair, I would request in the process of assisting us in informing ourselves and also in monitoring future engagements that we might have, whether you could let us have a progress report on them, because you said that you have a long list of things that were not attended to. Some have been attended to. Perhaps if you could give us that list with the things that have been attended to and the things that are still outstanding, which is of course the important matter. If we could have that within in 14 days, then that could assist us in our further deliberations. All right, Chair, can we have that in 14 days?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, linked to that is the internal audit, because it says here an internal audit section was established, but it was not fully operational during the under review, and no reliance could be placed on the work of internal audit. Has that internal audit section now become operational?
Yes, Honourable Member. We do have a staff member who is appointed as an internal auditor, and that unit also still needs to be beefed up.
So we have an internal auditor appointed. We do not as yet have the unit.
It is a unit, but it's being built up.
Yeah. What I mean is that in terms of warm bodies, in terms of human beings, we only have one person appointed as an internal auditor, and that person must still look around for people to work with, which will then make them a unit in terms of being a grouping.
I think the CEO can give the talk that.
Yes, ma'am. Just press it until it turns red.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We did recognize the weaknesses that we had, and have since co-sourced a private company to assist us to deal with internal audit issues, because there are quite a few things that
have to be addressed. So you don't have an internal audit unit?
We do have an internal audit unit. Like I'm saying, there's one permanent staff member, but we've co-sourced a private company to assist us with internal audit issues.
Is there a time frame within which this private company is going to do the job for you?
We've gone through the procurement process, Chair. It's a question of us appointing them formally.
No. I'm saying them, when they're appointed, for how long are you going to have them doing your internal audit work?
For 1 year minimum, Chair.
Now, what is the maximum, not the minimum? Because we want you to appoint people.
Okay.
Otherwise, you will have no capacity. I mean, those people will be there, and when they leave, you're back to square one. Is it cheaper for you to outsource than appoint permanent people?
Chairperson, maybe we should indicate that with our CEO having joined the company a few months ago, she was looking at the whole structure of the organization, what needs to be reviewed, and one of the things that we are looking at is that unit of internal audit. So maybe, but in the meantime, we realize that while these other things have to be attended to, the best thing at the point in time is to get a service provider to assist us while we are still looking at the overall structure of the organization. I hope that suffices.
No, that should have been your answer from the start, because the impression that you gave the members of this side was that your internal unit issues have been sorted out, you have established that unit. That is, you have people employed who are doing your internal audit work. And I don't get a sense of agency from your CEO in terms of this restructuring process, because she's looking at a situation where this outsourced company will be in place for at least a year, which means your minimum period will be a year. Maximum, it can be anything. So I hear you're talking about restructuring and stuff, but I don't get the sense that there is that sense of agency of wanting to. Or it's an open-ended process. Look at restructuring, it can take you 8 months, 9 months, and...
Not exactly, Chairperson. I think she's considering the recruitment process in itself to allow for that.
I know. When you hear with us, talk in terms of the maximum, not the minimum. So we have a sense of what time frames have you put for yourself. Okay, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. This person that you've appointed in internal audit, the person in the organization, is that person financially qualified or a qualified auditor?
Yes, she is qualified, Honorable Member. I'm not so sure when you say she's a qualified auditor. What do you mean? Do you mean that she's a chartered accountant?
But ma'am, you have already said she's qualified, didn't you?
What qualification does she have? I'm not sure whether it's male or female.
She holds a BCom degree, and in her degree she's done accounting and internal audit. Auditing as a course, up to second year or third year. She's taking second and third year, yes.
You seem unsure.
First year course, I'm correcting myself, Honorable Member. So it should be a second year, third year course, not a first year course.
Yeah, well, of course, everybody who does a accounting BCom has that, but that doesn't qualify you to be the only person or even the chief of an internal audit. I mean, it seems that is a great lack. You don't have a properly qualified person to head internal audit. That person is still to be trained as an internal audit. It's a very good starting point, but it's not somebody that can take over the internal audit.
But didn't you realize this when you appointed that person?
Chairperson, I take it that the process that was undertaken to appoint the person at that point, we thought the person was competent enough to do the work.
What made you think so? What made you think so?
I mean the recruitment process that was followed, the normal recruitment process, but sometimes. What appears on paper and the actual competence of the person may I really will not say that maybe it's because the person is working alone, they need more staff to assist her, but I'm just making a supposition here. I'm not sure.
Who could be sure so that we can talk to that person? Because that's what you are the chairperson, you are here to account and give us factual responses.
Chairperson, with due respect, we do have a process of recruitment that we follow.
I understand, ma'am. I think the point that we're making is that, yes, you had a process and you followed it to the letter, but then you appointed somebody who is not sufficiently qualified for that position. I think that's the point that we're making. And what it implies, that person is supposed to be your general manager finance, supervising everybody below her. Now, the quality of that supervision, that management, in terms of finances, it might be a prediction, but I'm saying the general problem that we experience with departments and entities is around management, around monitoring, around supervision. But maybe that's a mute point. I was just remembering that the restructuring of the organization would certainly not have a bearing on internal audit. You still need internal audit, whatever the structure of the organization. So why delay the appointment of other people and outsource for at least a year, when whatever restructuring you're going to make, it will not affect the internal audit division, and some of the challenges that you have had in the past require that that function be done efficiently and effectively. I'm saying I'm not convinced that there is any justifiable reason why you should not continue looking for beefing up that internal audit section with warm bodies who should do the job without just leaving it and relying on outsourcing.
Point is taken, Your Honor.
Just a minute. On this one? Yeah, okay.
Okay, just on this point, maybe we should just get a sense from the auditors, because I wouldn't want us to create the wrong impression as SCOPA. Is there a standard qualification for the head of internal audit? My understanding would be that you don't necessarily have to be a CA. I'm talking about within the department. So just so that, Chair, we don't, as SCOPA, send a message to other departments or other people that to be the head of internal audit, you need this and this and that. So I'm asking the audit, the AG's office. I remember us having a symposium of internal auditors, Chair, some time ago, and there's no ban that says to be an auditor XYZ. I think what we should be doing, and what Mr. Stevens is saying, is that individual must be competent. But it shouldn't be that you walk out of here and all of you look for CAs to head your audit unit. So I'm saying we should just get that point clear, Chairperson, because unless the AG's office tells me differently, but it wouldn't be correct to create an impression that a particular degree is the only one that requires the head of internal audit. If you could ask.
Just switch off your mic. The AG's office is represented by Hupuzeng today. I'm not going to comment to that.
I think, Chair, that I need to perhaps clear this up. I'm not suggesting that you need to have a chartered accountant. What I am suggesting is that you need a properly qualified internal auditor, because internal audit is a different qualification from a CA. In fact, they have their own board. If you're going to have a person that heads up such a department, they need to be better qualified than just a WECOM, because you could have at least an honours in internal audit as a basis, and experience, because without experience of internal audit, it's in fact more important than the qualification as such. And
yeah,
then it could be a different situation.
Yeah, no. I hear you, and I think the point here is that somebody has been appointed already. It's not our business to say fire that person or reverse the appointment, but the issue of competence is what comes in, because otherwise you're going to have inferior supervision or management, and then your problems will just persist.
I think that was the point that we're trying to stress, and the fact that your internal audit unit will remain, so it cannot be held and transformed by the overall restructuring of your organization. I think we'd let that point rest. Honorable Stephen.
Thank you, Chair. You see, there's an interesting situation. I think that it's almost the first time that I've actually seen this, and that is that you had an unqualified report in 2004-2005. And then in 2005-2006, you had a qualified report. And from the information we have gained from the auditors and their analysis, it seems that every qualification that you had in 2005-2006, you fixed. It's not a qualification in the 2006-2007, but you've got new qualifications in the 2006. So you seem to exchange one qualification for another instead of maintaining. Why is this let's say volatility of quality?
Chairperson, yes, it is true that we do have a new set of qualifications, and if one looks at them, they are mainly related to lack of appropriate systems in place. Now, I think that the reason might be the lack of continued monitoring and supervision, especially because during the course of that financial year, the former CEO left, and then there was a gap of about 6 or more months, and you know, when people are acting, this one is doing their own responsibility and other responsibilities. But I think somewhere there things did not go right. And to an extent that at the end of the day you find that the systems were lacking. And it is reflected in the qualifications that we have got.
You see, Chair, that brings me back to my original point that I made, because if you are a management advice company, a service provider of management expertise, you have a whole set of different controls from somebody who sells water. And it seems to me that that double focus that you have there is part of the problem that causes this. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree, Your Honor.
Chair, then, I must ask, the fraud prevention plan was developed but not implemented. Have you implemented the fraud prevention plan now?
At this point in time, yes, the fraud prevention plan has been developed, and the process of implementing it is ongoing.
So it hasn't been implemented yet?
It is being implemented.
Because is it a long process to implement it?
I think it's an unfolding process, because we have to comply with A and B and C and move along and ensure that you are consistent in doing that. So it's not a once-off affair.
Well, when do you think this fraud prevention plan will be fully rolled out?
I take it that it's rolled out already at the point in time.
All right, it's a question of language. It has been implemented, and they are living it in their daily practice in the entity. Okay. If I understood it correctly.
There's also the question of the policy for the provision of doubtful debts. And no process was followed to identify doubtful debt, and the debtors aging. So your age analysis of your debtors it was insufficient. Has this matter been fixed?
Yes, this matter has been fixed because at that point, at the time of the audit, the policy was not yet approved. It was subsequently approved by the 15th of November last year. So by now, in the report that we are going to be submitting, because we did provide the information of what has been done up to now, maybe the problem is that we did not submit it. You could be seeing that, yes, that provision has been made.
So you have a proper age analysis of your debtors?
Yes,
There's also the question of creditors' reconciliations, and there was also no proper system for that. Has that been put in place?
The system has also been put in place because, as I was referring to our response, we have indicated in our response that we have put the system in place.
So those qualifications that resulted from those lack of policies and lack of controls, we will not see again?
We can say that they will not resurface, Your Honor. Thank you.
Then there is the matter of expenditure. And the auditors say, quite alarmingly, that they were unable to determine RDP project expenditure amounting to 32,490,000 and project revenue amounting to 35 million, as disclosed in Note 26. And the projects were not accounted for individually. Lots of problems as far as that is concerned. Are you able to substantiate these amounts at this stage?
Yes, Your Honor. In our response, we have indicated that from the beginning of this financial year, the RDP projects are accounted for individually on income and expense per project.
And then does it... there was a income and expenditure were understated by R1 million. Have you reconciled that? Was that R1 million still floating around somewhere?
I'll ask the...
Thank you very much, honorable members and the chair of SCOPA. Yes, the 1 million that was actually not reconciled has now since been reconciled. And we can actually provide the total breakdown of the 32 million as well as the expenditure that relates to that. Thank you.
Then there is the question of Metro Rail inter alia. Tshwane Metro retail debtors amounting to 22 million. And the auditors say they were unable to determine the value of the total yearly sales for these debtors and to properly assess the debtors list provided, that you provided, due to the inadequate debtor system and supporting documents. Now that's historic, but can you now, at this stage, reconcile those retail debtors for 7.6 million and 22.3 million.
In response to that, yes, we are in a position to reconcile those data. I think through you, Chair, the problem at that point was there was confusion as to whether the final retail data should be accounted for in Makhane's water books or not. But yes, at present we can actually account for them.
Well, that's fine. And the last question, although it was not mentioned by the auditors this time around, but there was, as a matter of emphasis, in the previous year, in the term deposits and endowment policy, which they had a difficulty with evaluation, is that endowment policy still in existence?
Mm-hmm. the endowment policy is still in existence, Honourable Member, and it's actually going to expire in 2010.
Who is the insured last?
Chair, Makhalis Water is an investor in terms of the policy. But the insured life were meant to be some of the board members. However, in case
not all of the board members, some of them.
Some of them, yes. Three board members were made the insured in terms of the policy.
Who are the beneficiaries of the policy?
It's the chairperson and the other two board members. Oh, the beneficiary in terms of the policy is going to be Makhalis Water as the investor in the policy.
It says that the policy is obtained to provide, or was obtained to provide, for the post-retirement medical expenses. Whose medical expenses? After whose retirement?
It is some of the older employees of Makhalis Water, and at the stage when they were actually employed, the post-retirement medical benefits were part of their conditions of employment.
So that is all employees of Makhalis?
Not all employees of Makhalis Water.
How then do people qualify for this scheme or this policy?
Chair, to qualify for that post-retirement medical scheme, you should have been employed by Makhalis Water before a certain date. I'm not quite sure of the date at the moment. I do not have it in mind. But after that particular cut-off date, the post-retirement medical aid scheme was no longer in existence.
Chair, the question arises whether... Or rather, was this a single premium policy, or is it an annual premium policy? Can we get a response?
Yeah, it is an annual premium policy, Chair.
Okay. So what is the annual premium?
The annual premium is $60,000 on a yearly basis, Chair.
Comment, Minister?
Yeah, Chair, just on this one. It's the second organization in a month that has come to us with an investment policy on an employee's life. Now, Makhalis Water have an investment policy? You know, for the life of me, I'm struggling why we would invest in Vincent's life as opposed to investing in unit trust or investing in old mutual properties and so on. It just doesn't sound kosher, let's put it to you that way. To use state money, and I understand that the beneficiary is going to be employees, but to stake it on an individual's life doesn't sound correct. In fact, we advised the previous organization to reverse that thing as soon as possible or to correct it. I do think that we can't continue to pay $60,000 on the life of the chairperson of the board and two other board members. I think you need to go and find a better investment. And also for you, maybe through the internal audit department, to make sure that we've got an investment policy that doesn't raise problems. Let's tell you why we're doing this. Last year, we had a fiduciary type of issue. This committee had a fiduciary issue where CETA used monies intended for something else, and it came back and it bit us. And when I say us, I'm saying South Africa Incorporated Public Sector. I don't think we can tolerate much longer dodgy investment policies. So maybe Mr. Stevens, you might want to be a little bit more tough on this one, that we can't just accept it that for now until 2010 that endowment policy is secured by the life of Vincent. But it just doesn't sound right. I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm not saying there's anything underhand. It just doesn't all go well. And we should stamp out that practice as soon as possible across government.
Yes, Chair, I was coming to the further details of this. And that's why it's important whether it's an annual or a single premium policy. The problem with an annual policy, as we know, is that if you cancel it before term, there are lots of penalties to be paid, so you will lose a lot of your investment if you cancel it beforehand, if you cancel it prematurely. How long has this policy been in effect?
Chairperson, I can't remember the exact number, but this matter did come before the board of Magalis Water, and we discussed the merits and demerits of cancelling the policy at that point in time. And somehow the board concluded that in view of the those penalties, if we cancel, we agreed that we will let it run, because we realized that 2010 is only 2 years from where we were discussing it. So somehow we could realize that it was an unpleasant situation, but nevertheless we thought maybe we should leave it at that point. That's how we came to leave it, because we did discuss it in detail in that.
Yeah, of course the other option would be to declare the policy paid up, in which event you don't incur the penalties, but you can only collect it in 2010. Did you look at that possibility?
No, Honourable Member, I don't remember us being that route. But I think we are taking the advice.
Yes, I would suggest that you do that. Declare it paid up, because then the 60,000 doesn't have to be paid anymore.
Thank you very much.
But just from a point of interest, who is the
Honourable Member wanted to come in?
Okay.
Let the okay. Maybe the Honourable Stevens are going to ask the question that I'm going to ask her. I think she.
Right.
Okay. What I just wanted to inquire was, who was so convincing? Was it an agent or was it a broker? Who convinced the? I thought so. Who was the? Shall I say the extra beneficiary? In other words, the salesperson. Is he related to anyone in the organization, or what is the setup over there? Because you need tremendous skills to convince, I think, a board for something like this. Tremendous skills or influence.
Honorable Member, I can say that as far as I can remember, it wasn't really the board making that decision. I think the management at that point was convinced by some agent, and the board, when we discovered this, we took the matter up and discussed it and realized that it wasn't really a good course to follow. Thank you.
Just as a follow-up, is the chairman perhaps aware of anyone of the board or from the management which shared in the commission?
I really cannot pronounce on that particular matter, especially because at the time when we were discussing this matter as the board, the members of management who were there at that point we're no longer in the organization. So for us it was difficult to really establish the nitty-gritties around that. Thank you.
All right.
the...
I've done, thank you, Chair.
Okay, Comrade Gumet.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question is to the Mahalis board, but it applies right across the other water board. It is around the medium to long-term risks, around contingencies and long-term sustainability. I just want, coming from the experience of Eskom load shedding, I think everyone is concerned about a continued and sustainable water distinct supply. What are the current capacities, purification levels, operational levels? How do they compare with the projections of things like 2010? Because I hear, I've seen in page 16 here you talk about fan parks, but you do not talk about your capacity that is projected for 2010. And then perhaps in the longer term, like 2020, are we going to be in a position to handle the needs and the projected populations that we are likely to be having at that time? And if so, what are we doing?
Okay, maybe let's do this, Comrade Gumet. Let me come back to you when Stevens is done, so that if then we can allow everybody to respond as a cross-cutting question.
I have actually done. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, really? I'm disappointed in you. Oh, no. Oh, my word. Okay. All right. Can you respond to the last question? Capacity, sustainability. I was watching BBC yesterday, and there was this advert that water can be or will be traded just like oil. Where are we heading to? So far as Mahalis is concerned to start with, and then Dawbush, and then Tech, Namakwa. Yeah.
View of the fact that we are busy with the strategic plans, I'll request the CEO to maybe make some indication.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. One of the challenges that you picked up as we were going through our operations as an organization was the fact that we are not planning properly for long term. Hence, we're giving it much attention, and we're also procuring a system that will be able to tell us about our capacity for today, 5 years, 10 years, and 20 years' time to see where we are. But in conjunction with that, we do work with municipalities and their IDPs to see what they're projecting on. There is currently a huge demand on us, especially with the development of mines going up north, which we are working very closely with DWARF in terms of planning, because there were some conflicts as to how everybody was doing their own thing. Now DWARF is leading the process in saying that if we are going to plan for those areas, we should do it together. But then we are working on it.
All right. Thank you very much. Bush?
Thank you, Chairperson. The challenge with bushbuck is basically the place is semi-arid to a high degree. If you look further north, all the rivers in the sand catchment areas are quite dry. So we're currently relying mainly on Inyaka Dam, which is quite strong, and the Sabi River Basin, which is also very strong. So these are the two river basins or schemes that will be expanded further to cater for the entire bush bush area. We are doing this in collaboration with the municipality because they are directly involved in producing the IDPs, so we're taking part in that, and DWARF is also involved in that kind of exercise. The challenges that we face basically is the water use patterns in the area, quite vast. Basically, we are anticipating doing research into this kind of water use activities in the area because people have got huge lands, and
reduced stands, and you, if you compare the use of water in a village and in a urban area, there's a huge a gap. But what we're seeing lately is that there's a huge unaccounted for water at municipal systems, which we are working together, the municipality, to try and address. Because if we can recover that water, then we have got enough water to distribute to more people in the area.
But what about the future capacity to provide water?
Chairperson, the
5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Chairperson, I think for the coming 20 years, we'll be secured with the Inyaka Dam. There's a development going on to make Inyaka Dam the regional scheme. Currently, it's sitting at about 50 megaliters per day. There's development in the coming 6 years to make it a 100 megaliter scheme, which is quite huge, which will take us beyond 2020.
All right. Is it fair to ask Namakwa?
I'd like to respond on that. The reality is that Namakwa, in terms of the supply of water, won't have a problem. There is the plans of a dam just above Vuurstrif, which was supposed to be finished 2010. I think that date has probably moved somewhat. We haven't heard about that yet. So that is not an issue. The issue is to getting the water to the people who need it. And our problem, the Namakwa Water Board, is now not only with regard to the people of Namakwa, but also the greater Namakwa. There's an area of Kamiesburg who's currently getting water of non-sustainable boreholes. There's water being transported into those areas. But we're also just talking about the population of 11,000 plus around about. But we're talking about a pipeline needed into that area of 110 kilometers. A couple of years ago, that was estimated at about 120 million. My experts sit behind me. So, and then there's of course the Richtersveld area, which a lot of you will see from the news for tourism and stuff like that. There's another area. Everybody seems to be doing their own thing with regard to water supply in Namakwa. Namakwa has got, in terms of some of the settlements, has got purification plants for people living next to the river, the Gudas people, the Rooibal, which they have to sustain. Department of Public Works is building a massive investment in excess of 300 million at the Vuurstrif border post. That has got its own purification plants. So the issue of water within our area is a major issue. So it needs to, people need to take note of this. We will not, unless we get a major influx of capital, all that water will end up in the Atlantic Ocean, and it will not get to our people who need it desperately within the communities.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Right. I'll give you Comrade Gumede, and then Comrade Vincent. Then we can go back to the department. Now we're done with the water board. You've heard what the issues are, the challenges are, and yes, Comrade Gumede.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think here the issue is with plans and triggering mechanisms. Like you have a municipality that supplies housing, they supply development at a certain level, perhaps the a certain level of population level, should then provide a trigger for even more action, because otherwise we with electricity it's at least we can withstand it. But if we experience what we experience with Eskom, with water, it will be much more calamitous than we have experienced, much more than we have experienced with electricity. So I believe that each water board has got to have those trigger levels work together with municipalities or whoever is using water, farmers and so forth, that if we reach this level and we are having this population,
we've got to start meeting and planning ahead. That type of arrangement. This is my point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's a few issues that have been raised which the department can respond to. Let me say up front, Chair, I think there's a scope for improvement in terms of our own oversight role. Some of the questions asked by the members make it very clear that we should be looking at strengthening the role that we play in terms of monitoring and also support to water boards. My colleague here to my right, Silas Mbenzi, is a person responsible for institutional oversight, and I'm sure he's listening and taking notes on some of the questions that are being raised. Just on a few questions, Chair. The one, I think, if I can summarize in my view, what are the issues that were raised? There's an issue with regard to the debts, the money that's being owed by municipalities to water boards. And if I may ask the CFO, who has been dealing with this matter, been in meetings with National Treasury to deal with that. The second issue, Chair, I think is related to the Section 78 process with municipalities, but I think we'll need to then respond specifically with regard to the case in Namakwa. The question was asked, why have we not done anything? And Silas will respond to that. I think the question about communication, especially with regard to the transfer of assets, I've got a report here, Chairperson. It gives us a state of affairs in terms of what assets have already been transferred and what assets are still in the pipeline to be transferred. I must say the process should have gone much faster than it did, and there are cases where we haven't transferred assets. I note the point about communication as well that was raised with regard to Bushbuck Ridge and ourselves, and I can assure the committee that we'll make sure that the necessary communication happens in moving forward. Let me ask my colleagues to respond to those two questions, and if there's anything else, we'll come back to.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and other members of your committee. The issue around the status of the debt owed to water boards by municipalities as of 31st March has been a focus of our attention and discussion of a series of meetings both within Dwarf and outside Dwarf since April. Now, what I'm going to share with you is the latest meeting or outcome of the latest deliberations and therefore the progress emanating from that, the meeting we held on the 12th of May. And this particular meeting focused mainly on the understanding the scope of the problem and how it should be resolved in a collaborative manner with the various role players. And these role players, of course, being the water boards, Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, Department of Provincial and Local Government, and National Treasury. Now, the most affected water boards during our engagement on this particular matter were Boshelo Water, Bushbuck Ridge, as you have picked up during our deliberations here today, Lepele, Northern Water, Sedibeng Water, Mshilatuzi, and Bloom Water. Now, as it has already been recorded, and I take it that indeed has been recorded, is something that confirms also with our engagement on that particular day, which is the 12th of May, there are obviously inadequate implementation of the credit control measures in the water boards, which you have rightly picked, most of the honorable members here have already picked up that, which I will speak to in terms of the actions that we propose on how to deal with that issue. Debt has been left to grow to a larger extent without doing the intervention at early stage in a manner that will ensure that the payment takes place within 30 days. There are obviously issues around the poor relations between the municipalities and water boards, especially those which have been badly affected. And some of the water boards, smaller water boards, struggle to monitor their debt management. And you have seen it even in the audit report. The lack of signed service level agreement between the service, the water service authority and water services providers was one of the issues that we felt needed to be addressed. And obviously the dispute around the amounts owed by between the dispute between the municipalities and the water board. Now, at that particular meeting,
let's not go into the details of the meeting.
No, the actions. I'm not going to the actions.
Just go straight to the actions.
Yeah, the actions. It was agreed that the National Treasury, DBFG, will conduct analysis of defaulting municipalities in order to have an understanding of the exact level of this particular debt. And obviously, on the water boards that are being owed or whether it's water fares, the other thing was that the verification exercise of disputed amount should take place between the month of May and the month of June, and should be concluded by the end of the month of June. So that process, obviously, I don't have the verified figures for those particular water boards, but that's the action that was agreed. Now, the decision needed to be taken on financial and viable water boards. In terms of whereby DWAF needs to lead the process, either to establish or to integrate some of the structures of the ailing water boards, such as Ingagala, in order for it to deliver on that particular mandate. And that particular matter is the one you will agree with me is part of the decision that was taken, for example, the water board that whose assets are currently being handled by the region in Mpumalanga. The facilitation of a dispute resolution, of the resolutions between water boards and all that, it was of course agreed that DWAF will lead the process, but the dispute resolution mechanism, there's already a guideline which is developed by National Treasury and which will need to be applied with the help of National Treasury in order for those disputes to be resolved within that kind of mechanism without escalating the issues to, escalating the matter to the law courts. Now, that is circular, to be specific, that is MFMA circular number 21 of National Treasury, which was issued in order to govern the issue of dispute resolution. But its implementation, the mechanisms operating with that particular circular is something that needs to be enforced from the date of that particular meeting. Now, it was agreed that also that there was a need to strengthen the role of National Treasury, especially with the reference to Section 41 of the Municipal Finance Management Act, which has created an enabling environment to monitor the water board's debt. Specifically, Section 41 places the responsibility on National Treasury to monitor the prices and the payment to organs of the state by municipalities in order to ensure that municipalities are able to fulfill their functions and they are able to meet their obligations on a timely basis without having to extend the debt overboard. Now, related to that, this issue of a guideline, in order to strengthen the oversight role of all the parties involved, the guideline has been was developed and it was discussed at that particular meeting. The comments have been provided. It's a question of it being signed off and being implemented by the various parties. Specifically on this particular guideline, we have detailed out roles and responsibilities for DWAF, roles and responsibilities for National Treasury under Section 41 for monitoring of the levels of debt, and roles and responsibility for the Department of Provincial and Local Government. I would therefore not go into the details of those particular roles unless you have more time for me to spell out what those particular roles are. Yes, but what I'm trying to say is that there is a guideline which has not been there before.
No. The picture that you've created is that processes are in motion to try and address the debt situation owing to the water board. That is one, okay. And the question of dealing with non-viable water boards, I think that will be the area of most interest to us. What, how are you dealing with this question, especially if you take the situation of Namagwa, or let me say in general, where you have water boards in economically depressed areas where their sustainability becomes becomes a challenge. And in this particular instance, okay, Ikangala has been attended to, but then you have Namakwa that without massive cash injection from the state, there's no way in which they can survive. Are there any details, measures that are going to be implemented to address this question of non-viable water bottles?
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson, for that question. There are short-term and long-term mechanisms that have been put in place in order to address the very same issue. The reason being that I think most members of the committee have articulated the need to make sure that indeed, in as much as the institutions are struggling, the service provision to communities is not actually affected. And a very good case in point as a short-term measure, Chairperson, is in cases where the water boards are actually failing to carry on the function or they've got difficulties in terms of recovering their revenue due to the non-viability of communities that they serve, the department will is actually taking over most of the functions. A case in point is that Ekangala case in point that Panyana alluded to. On the long term, Chair, what we are actually doing.
But what about other water boards? Fine, Ikangala has been taken care of, but
yeah,
we have Namakwa.
Precisely the same thing. I presume, Chair, without being presumptuous, the same will apply to Namakwa Water, the same will apply to Pella Drift, and the same will apply to Albany Coast Water, which are actually facing more or less the same difficulties that Namakwa is actually facing.
Okay.
So that's the short-term side of things.
All right.
On the long-term side, Chair, what we're actually doing is there is a study that is currently, it's more or less finalized in some cases, wherein we're looking at the regional option, meaning that we've realized that to have a water board that stands on its own, particularly in a rural setup, it's not going to be viable no matter whatever you try to do. So what needs to be done is to look at the consolidation of water boards and let them operate within a regional framework, meaning that if they operate within the regional framework, there will be an element of subsidization from your urban communities to your rural communities. So that's a long-term strategy, Chairperson, that we're actually looking at.
Which means
so
the configuration of these water boards was not really well thought out.
Very true. Very true. Because if you look at it right now, Chair, most of the water boards actually either serve one part of a municipality without serving the... In other words, the configuration of water boards was actually done before the new alignment of municipal boundaries. So there is a need to reconfigure and realign things so that ultimately you've got things that are aligned properly.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there anything or we done? DG, was there anything you would like to add? All right. Fundis, you wanted to say something, or you're fine? Okay, all right. DJ, thank you very much. And to the water boards, once again, thank you very much. The question of water is the most basic of them all. As Kumete said, we may as well not have electricity, but certainly we can't afford not to have water. So it is important that the Dwarf should hold them by a very short leash to make sure that they, whenever there are challenges, they are able to. I assume it's a policy question. We must look more public than the other way around. It's not sustainable. It can't work. We need to go back public, big way. However we do it, whatever structures we create and maintain, but the leash must be very short, especially on critical matters like this. And I've asked someone in the Auditor General's office that as much as they have the right to decide what public entities to audit and not to, on what basis would water boards not be audited by the Auditor General when they provide such a very basic service to our people. I'm still waiting for a report. But we want to thank you very much and hope that there will be no reason for you to come back here to us. Although we enjoy being with you, but nonetheless we'll be happy not to, to have you here. To members of the committee, National Treasurer, thank you very much. You are aware today was our last hearing before we go on recess on Friday. We'll meet at the training towards the end of July here in Cape Town. And hopefully we'll be able to have an hour or so to try and look at our program for the next two quarters, taking into account the dynamics of our circumstances. But thanks very much. It has been a tough quarter, but we've persevered through it. And let's go recharge and prepare for more battles ahead. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.